To go back to the example of your bicycle lanes earlier, as I said, this can create well-being for people, so reduce stress because they cycle to work instead of sitting in traffic. These effects can be quantified. So you'd look at what impact stress has on their life satisfaction. And then you can express that in a monetary term by looking at what people's willingness to pay is for additional happiness, is often how it's done. Mm-hmm. You would also look at the health benefits, for instance. So these positive effects can also be added to the picture.
Hey there, and welcome to Money for Change, the podcast where we discuss current developments and the role of money in creating a more balanced and just world. Of course, we want you to be part of this conversation. Head over to our website via the link in the show notes to share your thoughts or ask questions. Let's get started. Hello, listeners. Welcome to the first English episode of Money for Change since we switched over to Dutch as the main language. This means that for the English listeners, we are happy that you have found the channel where the English episodes are uploaded. For the Dutch listeners, it'll still be uploaded on the regular channel. So hopefully you enjoyed this episode as well. Also, since the last English episode, at least, we've switched over the structure a bit. We'll start off with sharing some important and mainly interesting news events, and after we'll dive into the topic of the week. We have our regular guest present, Hans Stegeman, Chief Economist and Group Director of Impact and Economics at Triodos Bank. Welcome.
Thank you.
And this week we have Megan Rue from Impact Institute to join us for the discussion. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So a little bit of background before we head into the news. Megan Rue helped us publish the impact measurements for the energy transition and the mortgages. And that's also the key question this week. The monetization of impact, just another accounting fad or a real opportunity for change? So stay tuned. But first, Hans, you're going to take us through some newsworthy items this week.
Yeah, a lot of newsworthy items. But let's start with the first one. I don't know if many people saw it, but do you follow this? It's a kind of NGO. They buy shares and then vote at shareholder meetings, mostly against some policies. But this year they confirmed that they will not file any climate resolutions against oil and gas companies during the forthcoming AGM season for the first time since 2016. And the reason for that is mostly the backlash against climate conscious investors. And they are also a little bit scared that they will get sued, like they also did last year by ExxonMobil. And this, for me, is one of many examples of the situation we're in, mm-hmm. the time we're in, and that activism is getting more and more difficult.
But that's really interesting, because in the EU, we have the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, so a lot more companies reporting on sustainability information. How does that coincide with this? Why?
Well, this is mostly driven, of course, by the US climate. And they are afraid if they're... So this is the big oil companies. This was ExxonMobil last year. And you also saw that British Petroleum in their strategy really moving away from renewables, going to fossil again. But also the changing regulation in the US, that it is easier to file against NGOs, so-called SLAP. I don't know what SLAP is. So if somebody knows what SLAP is, it's suing an NGO for trying to pursue them to do more sustainable action. So it's completely different than in Europe, in the CSRD. But you can also question if reporting, so this is also about asking on an AGM, the board to have a different strategy.
Yeah.
And maybe they can still report on a lot of stuff and say, we're not doing great, but it's not...
Yeah, but if they're reporting on their strategy and on their CO2 footprints, which they need to do under CSRD, at least the ones in Europe, then it's logical that a board might ask some questions about that.
Yeah,
or you would hope.
That's true. Maybe listeners, we have here two CSRD experts. So everything I say about CSRD, at least Emma is an expert.
Yeah.
Megan is now looking. I'm not the expert, but I think she knows much more than I do. So... let's not go there. So let's go to the second.
What else do you have for us, indeed?
Second, a positive one. There was in The Economist last week was a great piece about Europe, titled "The Thing About Europe: It's the Actual Land of the Free Now."
Awesome.
So a lot of things that we normally say about Europe, but often criticized as being overly regulated, bureaucratic, lacking innovation. But we also avoid erratic billionaires like the Broglie-Karks, dominating politics, government shutdowns, impulsive trade wars. We spend less on defense, which I still think is a good thing. And although our economy might grow slowly, but we like to have more leisure, equality, social stability, over relentless productivity. And I thought, this is from The Economist. This is how we should see Europe and also value what we are.
Yeah. And that relates to the podcast. That was also a topic on one of the podcast episodes before.
Yeah.
Looking at maybe the GDP growth isn't as much in Europe, but the well-being of Europeans.
Yeah. So I think people at The Economist listen to our podcast.
Nice, and then
yeah. I think
clear evidence.
But I think it's good that we should also remember that in Europe, yes, there's a lot of what's not good, but there are also things from an economic perspective, a broader economic perspective, that is good.
Yeah.
And a last topic, and I saw a great thing that was also aligned with our previous, also in the previous podcast, about tipping points.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a new study in the American Economic Review, which is really a top-notch mainstream economic journal, about what people think about climate policies. And what they showed there also with a big survey is that most people believe climate change is a serious threat and we should do something about it. And that was also what we found in our survey in the Netherlands about mm-hmm. tipping point. Most people understand that we have a problem with climate change. And also here in this article, this academic article, was saying, okay, but people were not on the same page what we should do.
Yeah.
But at least there was a lot of awareness. Mm-hmm. And I think if we start building on that awareness more broadly, then we can get things done in the coming years. Try to be positive today.
Okay. And how do you build that support?
A few things also in the article communicate clearly about policy fairness. Fairness is very important about climate policies and effectiveness. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Design climate actions that directly benefit people. So it's not in the distant future, but also in the now. And prioritize public investments and fair regulations over complicated market-based solutions. So get things done also by governments.
By governments. Nice. Very clear, easier said than done, but some positive news, at least to begin this podcast. And hopefully, impact monetization, bringing into perspective.
Talk about a complicated market-based solution, but we'll get there.
We'll get there. Okay, so let's get into it. Our key question for today is, the monetization of impact just another accounting fad or a real opportunity for change? To start off the discussion, let's try to understand the concept. So Megan, what does monetization of environmental and social impact mean?
So monetization of impact is about taking all the effects that a business has. So for instance, there's tons of CO2 that they emit, their contribution to biodiversity loss, the jobs they create, and expressing all of these effects in a monetary term, like a euro or a dollar. And this monetary value should capture, or ideally captures, the value or the cost or the benefits to society from these effects. So with an example, for instance, air pollution is something that many businesses are still responsible. We look particular at the steel industry, for instance, is one of the larger emitters of air pollution. Air pollution carries negative consequences for environment, for ecosystems. These ecosystems provide us with services that our economy, our livelihoods require. In addition, air pollution has a negative impact on the human health. It contributes to lung cancer, asthma, a whole range of health concerns as a result of that. Monetization looks at what these costs are and tries to calculate them so that a business can see better what real value they create for society.
And so with that, you already kind of answer what would have been my next question. Why do you want to monetize impact?
Yeah, so I think fundamentally the purpose is to value things that matter. So when people talk about things that matter to them, things they find important, they talk about things, money is not the only thing that mm-hmm. comes up, right? They talk about access to healthcare, access to clean air, to clean water, a stable and fulfilling job, and maybe also the quality of their relationships, wide range of things. And monetization aims to integrate these things into decision-making and into the way a business is valued so that these valuable things can be treated as such, treated as the valuable things that they are.
Because that's what you currently don't really see is in companies reporting. There's a lot on the financials, but things that also are valued in society or by people are not being reported on or being communicated.
Exactly. And I think, you know, for investors, this is particularly relevant. So if you only look at financial value, you see like some of the big winners are oil and gas companies, steel companies. But if you look at a more integrated value, so if you look at, for instance, you know, they create this financial value from the direct destruction of ecological value of the environment. If you look at all of these broader effects, mm-hmm. the value of this company, especially in a long-term perspective, suddenly not so sunny.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
To give a bit more of a positive example, maybe, because yeah. I tend to be a positive person, I hope. I saw an example in the Netherlands here. We invest a lot in bike infrastructure. So being able to cycle to places. And that, for example, translates into health costs saved. So that would be an example of being able to monetize that impact.
Yeah, exactly. I think bicycle parts, you know, also have the effect that they have health benefits, also have well-being benefits. You're not stuck in traffic, causing stress, all of these kind of effects.
Mm-hmm.
These are also things you can, in theory, price, and then you understand why an investment in bicycle infrastructure is a positive thing to do.
Yeah. And then my question is, this sounds great. Are companies or investors currently doing this?
Yeah. And of course, you mentioned in your introduction one example of Triodos Bank, who just recently published a report which explores the value created from their financing of the energy transition, but also of the built environment. So we looked at their mortgages. And basically here you see the impact of what the actual real value for society is for financing, for instance, wind and solar technology, as opposed to oil and fossil fuel technology. So I think investors are using it companies are using it to demonstrate the value that they have for society. Investors are also using it more and more in due diligence procedures. So in how they, prior to making an investment, assess, does this company have the environmental, the social impact that we expect it to have? Businesses are also doing this prior to investing in new projects or new developments. So it's being used by in a range of different ways, more and more.
Can I add some critical perspectives?
Please.
I think it is, on the one hand, very important to speak the same language and to mm-hmm. use the same kind of tools as we are used to. So using monetization as an idea and to also share and speak in that language about values is important.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are for me a few challenges which also account for what we do here as Triodos Bank.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is it can lead to the fact that even if you destroy nature, if your financial value is higher, you have still a positive integrated value. And some people might then decide, yeah, but it is in net terms, it is positive. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that state of our ecosystems, it might be better to say we should not do this.
Mm.
So this is about substitution. So if you use the same denominator, monetization, you can say we add it all up and it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And that's, I think, a threat. So we should be very aware of that.
Can you give a very practical example of this?
If you earn a lot of money with killing, I'm thinking about foxes or whatever.
So,
So you have a farm with animals and you kill all those animals and they have a highly valued fur.
Yeah.
And you can monetize those negative effects.
Mm-hmm.
It is very hard because what's the death of a fox in this case?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How should you value it? Then, and you come up with a relatively low number, maybe because there are a lot of foxes and they. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about foxes, but and you earn a lot of money with it. Then, in that terms, it's positive.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can say, okay, so if we make this summation, we conclude that it is for society at large, it's positive. And this links to a second point that you leave out ethical considerations. So you say, okay, if the sum is on average positive, then it's okay, no matter what we think about it, because that's what calculus says.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's the place where we are as Triodos Bank, of course, that we have ethical considerations, what we like to finance and what not. So even if we do this monetization, which we do, which we publish, it's still not the objective of what we want to achieve. we want to create positive impact, which might mean, by the way, that sometimes it has currently negative impact. So if you would sum everything up, it might be negative. Well, we think it's still important.
So there's valuing impact, or at least bringing it into perspective, is really useful, because that way you can understand and compare it to financial decisions that you're making, or at least bringing it into kind of the arena. You're bringing well-being, healthcare aspects, at least into that discussion of financial discussions. But there's a risk, as Hans says, of oversimplifying it, because when you express it in financial terms, we like to add things up and net them out. And then that way you still probably, because fox fur can also be overvalued, for example. You're not addressing that issue with it. Exactly. So there's an issue of netting that out. And I know within Triodos, we decide not to net it out, but have insight into the specific impacts.
It's the same as what we... So this is really a market solution for sustainability, not an ethical solution.
Yeah.
So if the market says it's okay, mm-hmm. more or less, then we say, let's do it.
All right, I see Megan.
Well, I think firstly, you know, currently the markets that some markets may and some investors might choose to bring in these ethical considerations, but it's not done in any kind of systemic way. And I think if we look at what is the alternative, it would be maybe to leave out the issue of the poor foxes or altogether, you know.
And just forbid it.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Right. So if there's certain things that as a society you want to decide, or as an investor you want to decide this is completely against your ethics or that your morality, or as a society you want to agree, this can come on top of these effects, right? Alongside policies like this also play a role. However, in the current scenario, we're just financing based purely on financial value. We're trying to bring more of these ethical, more of these human rights into the picture, into the perspective, so that they weigh more heavily. And I think fundamentally what we're trying to do is change what success looks like for a business. So currently, businesses are just successful just by how much profit they create, what their share price is, dividends for shareholders, and we're trying to change that. Yeah. So a company cannot just be successful by making lots of money. And I think that's broadly the shift that this aims to, and it's just one tool as part of it. Indeed, it's not a magical one that fixes everything, but it's one tool. And indeed, netting, you have to be really careful about. So being netting out all positive and negative effects, for instance, it's totally not fine for a company to make a lot of profits, but have sweatshops in the back where you have children working ridiculous hours and horrible conditions and not attending school. Those are all effects that we would try to measure, impact valuation, measure. It's not okay that this profits can just compensate for those externalities. So you really want to be able to show these different effects also alongside each other rather than
Did you find, it's a different question, but did you find ever in your work a company that has net positive impact, absolute impact? So absolute impact, that means that those externalities, those extra effects that you can monetize are positive in this case. Did you ever find it? Because I think always economic effects are negative most of the time for environment or social or whatever.
Yeah. So net positive only in terms of environmental and social?
Yeah.
In absolute cases, no.
And so absolute means by itself. And what you normally look at is compared to a reference scenario. And then you, of course, find positive ones, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it completely depends. For some companies, you really want to understand them compared to a reference scenario where they do, for instance, a renewable energy or battery provider. They really do something different from what's still standard in the market. And so you really want to understand what kind of societal costs are they avoiding. And this can be for some people, call a positive impact, positive marginal impact. But for many companies who are just represent the average in the market, you want to understand the impact in an absolute sense.
Yeah. And so if that means that most companies has in an absolute sense, if you would monetize their impact, are more negative than their profits, that's what we more or less say. In an absolute sense.
Not always more negative than their profits.
So that means that on a macro level, GDP should definitely be lower.
Yeah.
The real impact corrected GDP should be lower.
And that's more commonly referred to as internalizing the externalities.
Internalizing the externalities. Yeah. And that means that compared to economic metrics and financial metrics, we are a lot poorer than we think we are in terms of material prosperity.
Yeah. I mean, the point is that these costs, and what I often get from people is they tend to think that I'm talking in fictionalized costs, right? Like I've just made up some numbers and here they are. But these are real costs to society, right? So if we look at things like even an easy one, like underpayment is something that occurs in nearly every value chain. This is where somebody is paid less than what's required for a decent standard of living. This is real that people experience this. And so your business, to be successful in your business, you're keeping people in some sort of state of poverty or living below what is required for a decent life. And so, yeah, if you price all those effects in, I think indeed the GDP would be lower.
Yeah.
It's also true that we don't price in all the positive impacts as well, which I'm guessing is what you wanted to ask me.
Yeah, how do we do that? How do we ensure that this impact monetization is implemented well and you also get the positive effects, especially when you're trying, you know, at Triodos, we try to invest in sustainable activities, values-based banking. How do you go about this with impact monetization?
So I think a big focus is on these negative externalities, right? And for good reason. These are hidden costs. These are costs that people act like they don't exist, but as I just said, that they do. But there's also the question of positive value. Business models or many kind of investments, this positive value is often overlooked because it's not a purely financial value.
Mm-hmm.
So to go back to the example of your bicycle lanes earlier, as I said, this can create well-being for people, so reduce stress because they cycle to work instead of sitting in traffic. These effects can be quantified. So you'd look at what impact stress has on their life satisfaction, and then you can express that in the monetary term by looking at what people's willingness to pay is for additional happiness is often how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
You would also look at the health benefits, for instance. So these positive effects can also be added to the picture.
Can you, for instance, measure the value of very nice colleagues? So our relationship managers who treat our clients very well, like our colleagues, of course, do at Traders Bank. Can you also monetize that impact?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, these...
We don't do it, but
no.
We should do it.
Yeah, then you'd really want to speak indeed to the clients and see what their effect is from what they experience as a result of this positive service or this, you know, warm relationship they have with your relationship managers. Understand how that impacts their well-being, their life satisfaction. And then these effects can typically be quantified and monetized using kind of willingness to pay, as I said, ideas.
So it sounds like it can all be done. I think the practical measurement seems like that's mainly the challenge. Also working with this methodology and trying to understand how you can measure something when maybe not all the data is there. Mm-hmm. Then I do have to ask whether AI or technology is going to help us give all this insight in the future and what your thoughts are there.
Yeah, there are many, I think, risks associated with AI. And probably I think you discussed those in a recent other podcast. However, I do think it has potential to really help with this. I think the critique indeed we've got for a long time is that this is very burdensome data-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a lot of effort. Is it worth it spending all this time and money doing all these calculations? And I think if we get to the point, and I think the industry is getting there, where there's really robust standards on what should be measured and how it should be measured, then AI can really help us to gather all the relevant data and convert that easily into numbers. I wouldn't necessarily trust AI completely to tell me what the important things to measure are.
Right.
But if we agree on that together with also in a values-based way, then it can really help fill in the effort.
And maybe another point on monetization and all the data. If we only speak about monetization and what's the price of everything, people might also behave in a very rational, calculated way.
Uh-huh.
Is there not a problem of using all that data and all that monetization? Should we not just trust our guts and say, yeah, this is simply not good enough? So why should we have the data if we don't do it?
It really depends on the kind of person you are, I think. I think people have bounded rationality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and we do live in a complicated world where making the right choice is not always easy. And I think having more transparency can really help to guide to make the right decisions. So, you know, one application of monetization is true pricing, which is really an application for consumers where they can see, well, maybe if they go buy a cup of coffee, if the coffee costs, say, €3.50, well, that doesn't include the fact that it was shipped over from some place in West Africa. Doesn't include maybe the underpayment or the child labor that was involved in the harvesting.
And if so, these costs are all priced in. The consumer can start to make better choices about which coffee they want to buy, which suppliers they want to buy from, whether they want to get their coffee with an oat milk or a dairy or dairy milk in it. So I think it can really help people to make the right choices.
So the key question answered, the monetization of impact, just another accounting fad or a real opportunity for change? Hans, what's your conclusion?
An opportunity.
Nice.
But not the opportunity.
So what I've learned is it definitely helps bring social and environmental issues that are currently not on balance sheets, currently not being reported on. It brings that into the picture. It really brings transparency to bigger value chains that are so complex now. But of course, making the actual decisions and making the changes is still up to us humans to make those decisions. I've heard that netting is not desirable because that then, you know, oversimplifies very important aspects, and that potentially in the future, technology can help us with the data collection. So an opportunity for real change. Thank you, Megan, for giving us more insight into it. And before we head out and wrap up, I have to ask our closing question. What would you do with 10 billion euros to change the world?
Yes, fun question. I thought about it and I think three things. So first, deployment of renewable energy technology, probably in places like South Africa, where I'm from, and the developing world, where I think, well, energy is often the driver of wealth and development. So let's make that clean.
And based on your impact calculations from the past year, would you do anything different in the current sourcing of those solar panels, I'm guessing?
Well, of course, indeed, you want to source in the most ethical way possible. But what the calculations also showed is that the financing in developing economies was very impactful, right? Because there, the grid mix is often very dirty. So coal is used a lot in South Africa, used in India a lot, for instance. The other thing is, I think, development of meat alternatives. So financing really good meat alternatives because, the rest of the world is going to eat lots more meat. So we want to make sure that they're eating it in the best way, eating meat alternatives rather than cattle. And finally, I think with the way the world is now, investment into a sort of free press and journalism and making sure that we really promote alternative press and that they have the right financing to do their work and also to protect them against legal cases and things like that. I find that also really important now.
Awesome.
Yeah. So hedging my bets here. I thought about it.
Yeah.
You warned me about this question. I gave it some thought.
Nothing to add. I think they're very...
What would you do? Have you answered this one already?
No.
Oh, Hans never gets asked this question.
We make in a few months a special on all the answers of every guest, and then we do a special, I think, on it.
I look forward.
All right. Thanks, Megan, for joining. Thanks, Hans, for joining. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of Money for Change. Stay tuned for next week's episode. It will be in Dutch, but after that, I will come back to host another English episode. Have a great week, everyone.
That's a wrap for this episode of Money for Change. We hope you found today's conversation insightful and inspiring as we continue to explore the transitions that are shaping our world and our future. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for tuning in to Money for Change.